This is a download from the BBC. To download other programmes or for more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live.
John in Barcelona, Simon and Dr. K. Sorry, but after my success with Pearl Harbor last week...
Which is very good.
I couldn't stop thinking about tree-related movies. So this is the end of the tree correspondence, okay? But we finished this with John's.
Yep.
I closed my top five as a kind of exorcism.
Okay.
So I can hopefully stop thinking about it. Number five, Redwood. Four, Cops. Three, Jurassic Bark. Two, Beaches. And number one, Top Gun.
Very good.
Which we'll have to do, I think. And that's quite enough of that. Reviews coming up before four of The Departed, The Devil Wears Prada, Neil Young, which is Heart of Gold.
Neil Young, Heart of Gold.
Neil Young, Heart of Gold, which has presumably got Neil Young in it.
Yeah.
And he sings Heart of Gold.
You
at
know
least
where I
once.
Stand on Neil Young, don't you?
Yeah, and you're wrong. So anyway, the box office top 10.
Eat your words.
At 10, The Black Dahlia.
Dahlia.
Is that it?
Yeah, no, well, it's, you know, it looks very good. It's insubstantial. It is very much a unfilmed De Brian De Palma.
You and Me and Dupree at number 9.
Not as funny as it needs to be.
Phil de Cack.
Yes.
Little Man 8.
Evil, bad, everybody involved will clearly burn in hell for all eternity.
Little Miss Sunshine at 7.
Not half as funny and scabrous and nasty as it needs to be considering the subject matter.
Talladega Nights at 6.
Few laughs, mainly thanks to Sacha Baron Cohen, but not enough to warrant a whole comedy.
The Queen. At number 5.
Very good on your television screens. Will look lovely from the comfort of your sofa. Doesn't need
does to
be
the
cinema.
Does it have the national anthem anywhere in The Queen?
Do they play The
Should
Queen?
Should finish with it, really.
No, they use... Well, of course, people of our age will remember that they used to play the national anthem at the end of a film. Nowadays, of course, since most credit sequences last 13 minutes, there wouldn't be nobody around to play the national anthem too. There are very few people, very few film critics, in fact, who stay till the very end of the credits film. Philip French from The Observer is one of the very few who stays doggedly to
right,
the very end.
Yeah. Do you remember that fantastic episode of Dad's Army where, in fact, that exactly they could see a movie this during the war, the film finishes, they start to play the national anthem and Captain Manning gets trampled under the stampede to get out. So clearly, I don't think anyone has ever stayed to the end of it. Children of Men at number 4.
You know, if they played the Internationale, I'd stay. I think that's what they should do. They should play... Arise, ye starvelings, from your slumbers. I would stand for. Children of Men, great.
I don't think we'd stand for any
more
of that.
No, it'd be great. And we could do it in the original Russian as well, which is marvellous.
Children of Men.
I think one of the best things on release at the moment. Very good dystopian future vision. Alfonso Cuarón directing extremely well and, ripping, if rather grim, entertainment.
James in Barnstable went to see Children of Men. Very impressed.
Good.
I was very disappointed that, seeing as though Chiwetel Ejiofor was in the film, you didn't even rave about him, didn't even mention the boy Chew, didn't even say that he was in it.
He is very good. He's a very, very fine actor.
Now.
No, but the thing was, I think the reason was I was so surprised by how good Michael Caine was, because I make no bones about this. Caine has too often done a caricature performance of himself, and he really pulls out all the stops in a good way in Children of Men. And Chiwetel Ejiofor is just always great in everything. I mean, I've never yet seen him put a foot wrong, even in movies which are not as good as him.
We have World Trade Center at 3.
Well, you see, I seem to be the lone voice of support for World Trade Center. In America,
in this country.
Yeah, in America, it got very good reviews, largely from the sort of, you know, the more right wing organizations, Fox News, that sort of thing. And everyone said the thing that you quoted to Oliver Stone, that one, I think it was Fox News, said it was, you know, it's pro family,
pro flag, pro male, pro America.
Yeah, well, actually, I think.
Actually, across the board, people liked it. Wasn't just the.
No, across the board, people did, but he usually comes in for a kicking from the right wing. Over here, there was just this howl of indignation from the liberal press saying, oh, Oliver Stone, how dare he, blah, 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 blah. I think wildly misinterpreting the movie. I mean, there are things wrong with the film, but I think it is much more genuinely heartfelt than some of the soulless cynics have given it credit for. I think there is a sort of metaphysical aspect to it which has been sorely overlooked. And I would stress that just because you have a character in it who says someone's got to pay for this and then goes off to war doesn't mean that that's the director's point of view. I mean, you know, Oliver Stone is very clear on this. What he's doing is allowing the characters to speak for themselves, and they do, and they speak in the way that they would. So I think it's a much... I think time will serve it better. It's unlike Alexander, which just looks worse the further away from it we get. I actually think World Trade Center is a better movie. I think that there will be some reassessment when it comes out on DVD.
Mark in Birmingham thought Dr. Kermode's review of World Trade Center was probably the best review I've heard for a long time.
Oh, good.
This is not intended to be sycophantic. I regard his opinion highly, but more often than not, disagree. Having seen the film in America in August, I've had a while to think about it and came to just about the same view as Mark, although I don't think I liked it quite as much.
Oh, OK. Well, that's fair enough, but yeah. But at least understanding that I think he is sincere. I mean, I think the problem with an awful lot of the reviews here is that they have charged him with, you know, selling out, with Rankin's. Certainly, I think he's not insincere. It just happens that when people are talking about subject, I think he's humbled by the subject matter, and I think that has caused him occasionally to be slightly overly lachrymose. But if there is a subject about which one can be sentimental, this particular story of these two people is the subject.
And number two is Hoodwinked,
which, you know, again is fatuous and vacuous and empty. It's yet another one of these updated, smart, sassy, postmodern, ironic fairy tales, which I could kind of live without, frankly.
This from Nida. Following Doc Kermode's I'm Heartily Sick of Postmodern Children's Films review of Hoodwink last night, I thought it might be a good time to tell him that, on the strength of a faintly remembered recommendation of his, I recently purchased Steam Boy on DVD.
Oh, yeah, well, Steam Boy's great.
It's a really lovely children's film with strong characters, great imagination, some interesting ruminations on the role of science in society, and beautiful animation, blah, blah, blah. It's a very, very long email. Anyway, he concludes, nobody really minded when Monsters, Inc. decided to tell children that, yes, they really are monsters and that they have the same mind-numbing office jobs as everyone else. Ho-ho, isn't that funny? But I've decided that it's time to start singing in one's finest Morrissey voice. That joke isn't funny anymore.
Well done. Well, he, she, was that a he or a she?
It was neither.
Neither, okay.
Well, I mean, I don't mean it was neither. It was
neither. Ba-boom. That joke was better. That was, thank you, hitting all
Nida
the key points
O'Leary
in that.
Sent that in.
Ending on Morrissey.
So Hoodwinked at number two, and the UK's most watched movie in cinemas is Click.
Yeah, and there we go again. Adam Sandler goes to the top of the box office with yet another substandard, not funny enough comedy. And it breaks my heart slightly because, you know, I ever since Punch Drunk Love, I've always thought maybe he'll get it back, but he hasn't done this time. The only thing that's interesting about Click is it looks about two-thirds of the way through like it's going to go to some really terrible, grim conclusion, and then it doesn't. So there's a moment in it, but then it all fritters away and it just becomes rubbish again.
Tim and Dave in Exeter went to see Click last Friday. We came out thinking it's one of the best Adam Sandler movies he's done. Mm. As big Sandler fans, we think Mark Cohen needs to get a sense of humour.
I know that, you know, senses of humour are obviously subjective. And I have nothing against no-brainer comedies, although this isn't a no-brainer comedy. It has aspirations for something. What I want is this. If you're going to make a dumb, nuts comedy, then at least do something original and do something that doesn't pretend to be a rewrite of It's a Wonderful Life. Don't, you know, get all Frank Capra on me when actually what you really want to do is Adam Sandler falling over and banging his head on the door jamb.
How would I get all Frank Capra with you?
Well,
how would you know?
Because what happens in this is exactly, it's like somebody sat down and watched It's a Wonderful Life and said, oh, you know, let's do that, but with a remote control. You project him, he's fed up with his life, he doesn't realise what he's got, so let's run him fast forward through the rest of it until the point that he realises that actually, Mary, it's, you know, oh, God bless you, and every time a bell rings, an angel gets their wings. Well, I'm sorry, that's one of the greatest movies ever made. Don't give me the Adam Sandler rehash of it. Thank you very much.
We've got some big movies to review, but it's only about a minute to the news. But hey, there's no newsreader or sportscaster.
No, but so in that case, I'm going to start with Neil Young. Okay, so here we go.
I hope we're going to get a clip.
We're not, but I saw that's why I'm going to start
play
with
a track.
No, but here's the thing, right? Neil
How about
Young,
you
Heart
are like
God.
A hurricane all the way through.
Hang on, let me do this right. Neil Young, Heart of God. Now you know I hate Neil Young.
Well, you're wrong.
Whining, whinging, nasal, bird of peace, you tasted me good. So I went in to see this. I sat through, you know, Neil Young.
Did not exactly go with an open mind.
I went to see it after having seen, you know, the Year of the Horse thing, which I thought was absolutely awful. And they cut between Rockin' in the Free World in two different versions, but 10 years apart, they're still exactly the same. I sit down. It's this concert of Neil Young at the Ryman Auditorium doing Prairie Wind for the first time. And he's got this lovely band on stage, Emmylou Harris doing backing vocals. And he's got this guy with his pedal steel player. And he starts playing, and all my prejudices kick in. Like, I can't stand Neil Young. And then something happens. And literally, it's a Pauline moment, and you're going to love this. Suddenly, I have tears, and I'm not making this up. I have tears streaming down my face. It's like a tuning fork has struck in my brain, and I suddenly realise with a mixture of wonderment and shame that I love Neil Young. And I'm suddenly swept away on this tidal wave of emotion. And really? Then he starts playing all those songs that I really, after having done Prairie Woman, which is absolutely lovely, there's this one lovely song about trying to talk to his father when his father has Alzheimer's disease. And he's lovely and he's humble and the music is absolutely gorgeous. And then he plays these songs that I hated. He plays Old Man, but he introduces it. Yeah, but I hated it. And he does this little introduction about it. It was about the caretaker. He went and he bought this ranch. He said, I was a rich hippie. I bought this ranch. The caretaker took me out. He showed me the ranch. He said, how come a guy like you can afford a ranch like this? And I said, you know, well, I just got lucky. And he said, that's the darndest thing. And then he played Old Man. And I just thought, I have been so wrong. And here's what I'm going to do as penance. I am going to get a T-shirt that says, sorry, Neil. And I'm going to... I was in love with it. It was like watching The Last Waltz. It was like suddenly the veils had lifted from my eyes, or the cotton wool had come out of my ears. And I can't tell you how profound an experience this was for me, because I hated Neil Young. I mean, the sound of him was like somebody whacking cats against a wall. I just hated it. And there I was, and there was it. And this despite the fact that the film is out of sync with the soundtrack. And this is how much I like Neil Young.
How does that happen?
I went and complained to the projectionist. I said, the film's out of sync with the soundtrack. He said, believe me, we know. We've told America. It's about four frames out. People are whacking the guitar, you know, the hands coming down the guitar and the thing's coming a half second later. It's a Jonathan Demme movie. He said, we know. We've complained to them. They said, no, that's it. That's the print. It's been printed. Mr. Those are the prints that's going out. It's slightly out of sync and it was driving me nuts.
So if you go see it, you know, don't complain about the, it being out of sync.
It's not the projectionist. It's the
not
print.
Eric.
It's the print. And they said they know about it and they tried to... They're really sorry about it. And even that, but by the end of it, I was completely won over. I was completely won over. And you were right. And I was wrong. And I couldn't hear it. And now I can.
This is
and
turning into a fine week.
Well, there we go. That's I honestly almost rang you when I came out of the cinema to say, Simon, I've had, but Neil Young found a place in my heart. And, I, and I'm lost. The thing that's going to happen now is that I'm suddenly going to realise actually the Grateful Dead are okay. And then there will be no point in carrying on.
He has done some rubbish, but, you know, hey, you know, so we all, yeah. Apparently.
Anyway, I just wanted to confess that.
Excellent.
It felt like
so a... you're born again.
I am. I am. I really am.
Dr. Glyn Powell writes, Mark, love you, but the original words of the Internationale were in French, written by Eugène Poitier in prison after the Paris Commune in 1871. Though I agree, I would definitely stand.
Thank you very much. I stand corrected. The reason I say the original version, because obviously
you would
wrong,
stand as you have been corrected.
Yeah, exactly. Is because there's a version of it. I mean, obviously, there is a very famous version of it in Russian that I have on a record, because I can't understand the words unless they are a literal, you know, the same. You know, we get to the second verse, oh, ye peasants, artisans, and others. In
no,
English,
I
it's
really
terrible.
Don't.
But in Russian, it's Doshny.
We'll get on to the exciting part. We actually get to review a decent movie. Well, mind you, Neil Young, Heart of Gold.
That's it.
It's movie of the week.
It's out
that's it. We'll
and
finish.
It starts
Drive,
somebody I hate, but it's brilliant.
So we'll skip over the others and just leave a bit of silence between now and Drive.
Yeah.
On the subject of Neil Young, Craig Thomas in Holloway, Derbyshire. Get over yourself. He made six great albums, the last one Zuma in 75, and about 30 mediocre or terrible ones. By the way, the Grateful Dead are completely rubbish, so,
yeah, they
don't,
are.
So don't worry. This from Martin in Stoke on the subject of the Internationale. Took a beautiful woman to see Reds years ago in Bristol.
Oh, Annie Hall goes to Russia, lovely.
Old romantic socialist that I am, yep. Says Martin. The only other people in the cinema stood up and sang the Internationale in Russian as the masses were storming across the screen. It was the last time I've ever stood for a national anthem at the pictures. Oh yes, says Martin, she married me.
Fantastic. And I think this is the beginning. Congratulations to both of you. And I think this is definitely the beginning of a trend we ought to have, singing of the internet. Forget the it's the death of postmodern, you know, death of narrative cinema. Stand up and sing at least one verse of the Internationale at the end of it. Why? Because it's a wonderful anthem. It's
so? So it's the French national anthem, I stand.
The French national anthem isn't a wonderful
it
anthem.
Is. Da, 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 da,
da. Great you can play tune. The French national anthem on a harmonica. That's
Gavin,
how good it is. You try doing that with the Internationale.
Gavin in Leeds. Mark mentioned Alexander a moment ago, which I had the misfortune to stumble across the other day.
Yeah,
I
rubbish.
Just wondered if he could give me any enlightenment into why there were so many apparently Irish people in ancient Macedonia and Greece.
And yes, no, it's a mess, that movie. It is. I told you the great review of it, I think it was in the New York Times, which said there are many highlights to this film. Sadly, they're all in Colin Farrell's hair.
Martin in Inverness. Simon, could you ask Mark to explain why there are so many jobs mentioned in film credits, and what is the most pointless title shown?
Well, the reason that film credits have exploded from what they mean, used to be that film credits would take about 3 or 4 minutes, but now, because of the, you know, everybody gets a different amount of money depending on their credits, all become much more kind of contractual. So you now credit absolutely everybody, and it's usually so and so's jewels supplied by, so and so's hair supplied by, so and so's hair wrangler, blah, 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 blah. And you get down beyond the first couple of pages, you think, I have no idea who any of these people are. And of course, once you get a special effects film, then it's, you're just sunk.
We promise you a review of The Departed in 1 second, but finally, Dave in Edinburgh. I miss that slightly rubbish movie game that you used to play. So here's one question. Onanism, adultery, murder. What's the answer?
Onanism, adultery, murder. Well, it'll be something like The Postman Always Rings Twice, or it'll be one of those erotic thrillers.
American Beauty.
American Beauty. Oh, yeah. Okay, fine. Yeah, no, yeah. Fair okay. enough. If you'd said Plastic Bag in the middle of all
oh,
that.
Oh, okay.
So that's what you're missing out, yeah.
So anyway, we've done a whole lot of nonsense, and there's the Neil Young movie, which apparently is great, and we'll convert everyone to Neil Young.
Even though it's slightly out of sync. The Departed, the new movie by Martin Scorsese, a remake, or, you know, a semi-remake of Infernal Affairs, which is a terrific Hong Kong crime thriller. Came out a few years ago. Actually, there have been 3 Infernal Affairs movies, and this is basically a remake of the first one. A big, romping crime thriller from Martin Scorsese, who's been off the boil for a while, but I thought made a comeback with The Aviator, which I like very much. I mean, Gangs of New York, I didn't care for. I thought Bringing Out the Dead was absolutely terrible. Now he's kind of back on home territory. Some people are saying this is the best thing he's done since Goodfellas, and it's certainly harking back to Goodfellas, although it is much more of a kind of procedural movie, of a sort of Michael Mann-style movie than it is classic Scorsese. It is very good. It's not Mean Streets, it's not Taxi Driver, but it is very thrilling and ripping. And it's the standard undercover setup. The story is Matt Damon is somebody who is sent to infiltrate the police department by a crime boss, played in scenery chewing style by Jack Nicholson. Leonardo DiCaprio, meanwhile, is a young rookie who is thrown out of the police department, in inverted commas, to go undercover in the organisation of the crime boss run by Jack Nicholson. So, on both sides of the divide, you have people working undercover, one pretending to be a criminal, one pretending to be a cop. And this is a very, very standard, very familiar setup, you know, Nietzschean, you know, you look into the abyss looks back into you, we are all monsters in the end, blah, 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 blah. Very, very well-known, well-worn, brilliantly done in Infernal Affairs, here revisited with actually much better performances from some of the, certainly from Matt Damon than you would expect. Now, for those of you listening on the podcast who didn't get that clip, the Jack Nicholson thing was amazingly him doing
it's like it's the voice he did in Batman.
It is. It's the sort of semi the voice of the Joker, isn't it? And it's, you know, ripping, evil, brooding, sluggy, in that way that only Jack Nicholson can do. Now, Jack Nicholson is playing Jack Nicholson. He brings that whole history of Jack Nicholson-ness to the screen. And it is very hard to imagine anybody else carrying off that part. And it is a bravura performance. I mean, I have to say, it's not so much a stretch as a sort of extension. It's not like they've asked him to play, you know, a gay ballerina. They've just said, Jack, you know, that kind of slightly threatening, slug-like, fat, evil, but charismatic thing that you do, would you mind doing that only a bit more and maybe a bit lower and do it in a Boston Irish accent? So everyone's got these kind of slightly drawling ahs in there. You've sort of heard him doing it there. He sounded a little bit like Robert Shaw in...
I thought it was the Irish Macedonian Greek
earlier. As modelled by Angelina Jolie. Funnily enough, the really exceptional performance is Mark Wahlberg. Mark Wahlberg, who I've had a real soft spot for ever since Boogie Nights, but has been an up-and-down actor. And, you know, he has great talent, but of course he was formerly Marky Mark and therefore consequently not taken very seriously on screen, gives a ripping performance as this absolutely foul-mouthed, abusive, aggressive cop who plays the foil. Yeah.
I said to Ray Winston when we spoke to him a few days ago, I said, there's no swearing in this, is there? He said, no.
No, there's no swearing at all. No, there is.
He was misleading.
He was absolutely misleading. Ray Winston, again, clearly enjoying himself as a role in which they said, well, you know, we'd like you to do very thuggy. We'd like you to do a Boston Irish accent, but if you can't do that, it doesn't matter. Just do Ray Winston. That'll be absolutely fine. The set pieces are very tense. There is, even having seen Infernal Affairs, and some of the set pieces are very, very close to the set pieces in Infernal Affairs, they move along at a pace. It's much more procedural than I would have expected from Scorsese in the past. If I have a reservation about it, it is that in the case of the original, and this may be something to do with, you know, with the fact that it was a Hong Kong movie and that it was made at the time that it was, it seems to be slightly more metaphysical. I mean, it was called Infernal Affairs in the translated title, and it was much more about that hellish descent with two characters literally coming face to face with themselves in this, you know, the how many layers are there in Dante's Inferno? Is it 7? Seventh layer.
It's a while
hill.
Since I read it.
Yeah, well,
it sounds about right.
You know, read it over a weekend, just
it's
to kind
it's
of
3 or 7. Isn't
it's not
always.
3. Third floor is haberdashery and stationery.
Well, 3 is a magic number.
Yeah, but it's not the third level of hell. Anyway, there was much more of that metaphysical dimension in Infernal Affairs, which actually was a much shorter film. This, on the other hand, for considering particularly Scorsese's age, finds him looking back to his younger days. There's an awful lot of pop music on the soundtrack. There's a lot of kind of Gimme Shelter period Rolling Stones, which again, you know, sort of evokes all those things like Sympathy for the Devil and that whole sort of demonic thing that they had going on at that point. Very good performances, very nicely shot, rips along, very enjoyable. It is slightly Martin Scorsese light, but it's very tense, very edge of your seat, and you come out at the end of it thinking, well, it's not going to stick with me and it's not going to haunt me like either the original did or indeed like Mean Streets did or like King of Comedy did, but it's much better than we could have expected. And of the rash of remakes, because it's one of those remakes, the Hong Kong remakes that's been brokered by these guys who brokered the remakes of The Grudge and Ringu and all that stuff, it definitely is the top end of that. There is the ghost of that film behind it, but it is more than just a remake. And go and see it for Mark Wahlberg, because he's great. Believe me, he's really, really good.
There are nine circles of hell.
Nine, sorry.
In the Divine Comedy.
Thank you. Did that just come through on an email?
No, I just looked it up.
Oh, okay.
Bless Wikipedia. Jackie Smith in Lewis. Simon, I've recently... And The Good Doctor.
Who's at the bottom of hell?
Doctor.
Who? Which statue eating who? Which two characters from history are being eaten forever at the bottom in the final circle?
Is Julian Sands one of them?
No. Julian Sands... No. It's Cassius and Brutus.
Obviously. Jackie in Lewis in East Sussex. Simon, The Good Doctor. I've recently returned from Spain where my husband and I were intrigued enough by the concept to purchase a Pirates of the Caribbean pizza from a local supermarket. It would be almost too easy to comment on the relative depth, taste and substance of the pizza very versus good. The film. However, I will share that in my opinion, my husband's shouts of Varby Olives and Pizza Ahoy throughout the cooking process, much to his own amusement, was marginally less annoying than Pirates of the Caribbean 2, which I found almost unwatchable.
Yes.
Could this be the acceptable face of this irritating franchise? Anyway, thank you for providing essential listening every Friday afternoon.
Thank you very much.
I must get you one of those. I'm going to get you a Neil Young back catalogue.
Yeah, that would be
and
nice.
A Pirates of the Caribbean pizza. Which might not be.
And a Grateful Dead t-shirt. The Devil Wears Prada, which is this fashion industry satire based...
What zone is he in?
Who?
The Devil.
The Devil, he's probably zone one, isn't he?
He's probably, yes.
Yeah, you know.
Access all areas,
yeah. Devil Wears Prada, fashion industry satire based on a roman à clef, or roman à clay, probably. It means, you know, novel that's based on fact, but pretending not to be based on fact. Novel of or something, anyway.
Obviously.
By Lauren Weisberger, who served a term working for Anna Wintour, who was the editor of Vogue. And consequently, people have said that this story is actually based on Anna Wintour, the editor of Vogue, although, of course, it's clearly not directly. The story is that a young girl goes to work for a dragon of an editor of a magazine called Runway. And the young girl is played by Anne Hathaway, and she is allegedly frumpy. And the editor, Miranda Priestley, is played by Meryl Streep, having, again, a scenery-chewing time, clearly having referred back to her own back catalogue, because, of course, Meryl Streep was very funny in Death Becomes Her. Do you remember that? That sort of strange fantasy movie with, I think, Robert Zemeckis directed it. Remember that with Bruce Willis?
Is that the one where they go around whacking people and knocking their heads off?
What?
Well, you could just say no.
No, well, there is. Well, there's the big... Yeah, there's the big hole in the gold. Yes, I mean...
Just checking.
No, it's strange.
We are still on the air.
Okay, no, fine. Moving swiftly on. Yes, anyway. And
movie reviews.
Anne Hathaway is meant to be frumpy. Meryl Streep is meant to be grumpy. Now, original it ain't. It is sort of a bit like Wall Street Light in the relationship between the young innocent who then goes and meets somebody who is kind of ragged but very, very successful, who sort of takes them under their wing. And that's the Anne Hathaway-Meryl Streep relationship. It's a little bit Working Girl. It's a little bit 9 to 5. There's a little bit of Prêt-à-Porter, the Robert Altman film in there. And there's also a little bit of Pretty Woman in it, because there's a character played by Stanley Tucci who causes the makeover to happen. So Anne Hathaway goes from being allegedly frumpy to suddenly being a sort of fashion goddess. Can I say that at no point in the movie is Anne Hathaway actually frumpy? I mean, she wears a plaid skirt. That's really about as frumpy as it gets. So it's not particularly original. There are some good lines in it. There's one lovely line which one person says, you know, I'm on this fantastic diet and the diet is that I don't eat at all. And then when I'm about to collapse, I have a lump of cheese. And there is some of that, but none of it is scabrous enough to actually really constitute an attack on the fashion industry. It's not really doing that. It's sort of flitting around the edges of it in much the same way as Pret-a-Porter. Now, Some people would say that this therefore invalidates the comedy because it's not a scathing satirical attack on this evil industry. It's sort of throwing little rocks at it, but at the same time rather enjoying its company and being sort of rather overwhelmed by all this fabulous stuff going on. I mean, I have, you know, obviously, look at me. I have no interest in fashion whatsoever.
You look very dapper.
Thank you very much. But you hardly, yeah, I look very dapper if, you know, it was 1956, but obviously not. Up to me, it's all nonsense.
I'm sure News 24 viewers enjoy you very much.
Thank you very much. But it's not something that kind of gets in there and really digs away underneath. What it is, however, is it's a perfectly good teenage girl movie. And it's funny because the teenage girl audience is...
How would you know that?
Because it's what it is it's the way into it is not Meryl Streep. Meryl Streep gives a great cartoon performance. That's, as I said, very, very close to Glenn Close in 101 Dalmatians. Do I mean 101 Dimensions? Yes, I do mean 101 Dimensions. I'm so thrown by liking Neil Young that almost all confidence is going out of the window. Yeah.
She was in the follow-up, wasn't she? Because Glenn Close played Cruella de Vil in the follow-up.
In both of them. In both of them. Glenn Close plays Cruella de Vil in...
Well, the first one was a cartoon.
No, but it's...
So obviously that's not...
No, it's the live... It's not
life.
A follow-up. It's a remake. It's a live-action remake.
Get on
so
with
101
it.
Dimensions, then 102
I'll
Dimensions.
I'll start singing You Are
Fine.
Like a Hurricane in a moment.
Thank you. But the way in is the Anne Hathaway character. And Anne Hathaway has got a very strong following in the same way, funnily enough, that Lindsay Lohan used to have, although she seems to have sort of ditched that recently. And I suspect that the target audience for this movie is 12, it's a PG certificate, 12, 13, 14-year-old girls who have an interest in fashion, who are interested in the Anne Hathaway character, who will see it as a good, ripping kind of comedy, but will not see it as an acerbic attack on the fashion industry, will just see it as a good comedy with some good one-liners in it. And good for them, because that's what it is. It's very frivolous, it's very flippant, it's kind of, you know, Friday night entertainment. And I suspect that an awful lot of the kind of sniffiness that it's received from, well, generally old white male critics here is because it's not really for them. It's much more of a teen movie than it looks like. From the outside, it looks like it ought to be a grown-up movie. It's not. It's not that film
at all.
Was
she really called Anne Hathaway?
Yeah.
Or did she just name herself after Shakespeare's wife?
I don't know. I mean, I didn't ask her. I've never met her. But, I mean, presumably she must be. It's like Engelbert Humperdinck, isn't it? Because he named himself after a...
After the real Engelbert Humperdinck.
Yeah, who was a composer, Dutch composer.
Look, I don't want to Google something else.
No, anyway, all I'm saying is...
I'm still in the ninth circle of hell.
The movie is flippant and throwaway and empty, but if it's viewed more in the line of Mean Girls, which is really the thing that it's in the genre of, it's perfectly fine. The problem is, if you try and view it as a serious satire, then it doesn't have any substance whatsoever and it all falls apart. But if you see it for what it is, which is, you know, Mean Girls partly, then it's perfectly fine. Or Clueless. It's in that kind of area. It's much more that kind of movie than this great big belting attack on the fashion industry, and it's much more fun than Pret-a-Porter, which was really boring.
And it's a PG. The Departed is an 18.
Yes, it is.
Just out of interest, is it an 18 because of drugs, or is it because it's a violence and baseball bats and that kind of thing?
All of those. All of the above.
All
it's
of
a
that.
Martin Scorsese
it's for
movie.
Every single reason that you can think
well,
of.
Well, yeah, okay. Sure, I don't think there's much sex in it. I don't remember there being much sex in it, but there's certainly swearing, there is certainly violence, there is certainly...
That Ray Winston, he just misled me.
The presence of... Yes, he did. What did he tell you? It's a nice family-friendly film and Anne Hathaway would absolutely love it.
And no cussing. Okay. You can squeeze another one
very quickly, the last thing I want to mention is this weird little movie, Brothers of the Head, which is a mockumentary without the mocking about a rock band.
It's a umentary.
Yeah, no, but what I mean is it's a made-up documentary. It's done completely straight. It's directed by the two guys who directed Lost in La Mancha and The Hamster Factor, which were these two documentaries about Terry Gilliam. Remember, Lost in La Mancha was about him failing to make Don Quixote. Mm-hmm. And they're very interesting filmmakers. It's a story about two... conjoined twins who in the 1970s lead a pub rock band that then sort of becomes a minor punk rock success. And then tragedy strikes. And the thing is constructed as a real documentary about this band that didn't exist, includes interviews with Brian Aldiss, upon whose novel it is actually based, Ken Russell, who is alleged to have attempted to make a feature film about this called Two Way Romeo, which obviously is, you know, not real, but Ken plays himself rather brilliantly. And the whole thing sounds like it ought to be completely terrible, but in fact it's a really interesting, strange, melancholic piece of work. The music is done by Clive Langer, you know, the Clive
as
Langer,
Alan Winstanley,
as Clanger and Winstanley. And one of the best things about it is that when the band are performing on stage, they really do look like a genuine band. They sound like a band playing live, and you do get to believe that these two conjoined twins did lead this band and did have this interesting pre-punk life. There's a little bit of David Cronenberg, Dead Ringers in its concerns in there, but it's as an odd, strange widget of a film, I thought it was good.
Andy, on the subject of the Grateful Dead,
yeah.
Please tell Mark I will personally buy him the two classic Grateful Dead albums, American Beauty and Working Man's Dead. Although vast tracts of the Dead are difficult to grasp, these two albums are pieces of musical cinema. His epiphany with Neil Young can be transferred to Jerry Garcia and band with very little effort on his part, and he will be a better person for it. I also agree with him about Adam Sandler, a great comic, poor films.
Exactly.
But you don't want
those. You're going to have to go a long way to convince me about the Grateful Dead. Elvis Costello apparently quite likes the Grateful Dead.
Also produced by Langer and Winstanley.
Who, the Grateful Dead or Elvis Costello?
Elvis Costello.
If Grateful Dead were produced by Langer and Winstanley, then I'd listen to them.
Movie of the week?
The Departed.
Which will do for most people,
yes.
As long as you're over 18.
But go and see Brothers of the Head, because it's really interesting.
No, thanks.
Thanks for downloading from the BBC. To find other downloads or more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live.